There's so much rejection in running a business. Always coming back to self is extremely important because you're gonna get knocked. Make sure that you are clear-minded and guided by your spirit and who you are, because that's how you're going to need to present yourself as an entrepreneur. You're gonna need to stand in conviction of who you are and what you're doing. So if you're not clear there, take the time to get clear there first, because that's what's driving your belief and your faith to continue to push forward, even in the moments of your hardships.
I have this crazy goal right now, which is in the next 3 months, so the next 90 days, I want this channel to hit 100,000 subscribers. Insane. Here's how you guys can help me. Right now, 96.9% of people that watch the podcast are not subscribed. If you've enjoyed this podcast, if you've gotten even one nugget of information, inspiration from this podcast, please subscribe. Help me reach my goal. Okay, so February 20th, 2022. This is what you said about your creative agency, 19th and Park.
Oh, you've got receipts.
Receipts.
Okay.
Okay, so you go, we're a 20 plus person team serving a variety of clients, including Fortune 50 and Fortune 100 clients. We have gone through the ringer in terms of bootstrapping and building our business, but we have managed to accomplish over $10 million in revenue in 5 years. And I say that proudly because it's not easy. I know that if we can do it, other people can do it too. Other women can do it too. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to start with kind of that end piece. Other people can do it too. Other women can do it too. Because I think it's powerful. But I'm curious, like when you reflect on your story, on the path, on the journey, where did that belief come from?
Yeah. Well, hey, thank you for having me here. Been looking forward to this conversation. If I'm taking it all the way back to I'm just going to say like my childhood. I grew up in a matriarchal family, meaning that majority of the women in my family were very successful, extremely hardworking, and the figureheads in their households, from my mother to my grandmother to my aunt to my other aunt. So I saw that left and right, and I think that from the very beginning instilled work ethic in me, confidence to speak my mind around whatever it is that I believe, but also have the flexibility and ability to listen to other people's perspectives and hear their perspectives, right? Because they were all really good at that. My grandmother, especially, she was very quiet, knowing that she probably knew more than what the person was saying on the other side, but just allow people to be kind of who they are. And I think that then translated into me just being very ambitious and having a certain level of tenacity and kind of just going for whatever it is that I wanted to do. And once I identified something that I was passionate about, it was kind of like a run and go from there, which was production, which was not even production because I didn't always know what that was, but it was creating experiences, like I mentioned earlier, and bringing people together. I knew that that started with like events, throwing parties, and that then evolved into actually producing live events and interning and seeing what that looks like on a larger scale. And then it only took me one internship and I fell in love. You know, it was just like a week-long experience doing a fashion week show. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. Look at all of these people. And we did all of this all for 10 minutes, 15 minutes of, you know, a show. But the adrenaline rush and the satisfaction and gratification that I felt in being a part of that was something that was unforgettable. And I just like couldn't wait to be able to do it again. And so I just continued to come back. Anytime they would call me, I'd be right there. I'd hop on that bus from DC. I was in school in Virginia at the time, and I would hop on the bus, call my grandparents, hey, I'm going to stay at your house for a week or so. I've got this job, and just kept doing it. And my professors supported it because they're like, I was studying marketing. They also didn't know really what production was, surprisingly, but it sounded interesting. So they would say, go for it. As long as you do your homework, it's fine. And I just continue to learn and explore and grow and connect with people and create these experiences continuously over time, that evolving into a business also happened organically.
You know what, actually, I find, I'm going to draw on a few threads here, actually, which I find interesting. You speak about like the matriarchy, like coming from this family background with incredibly like successful women, ambitious, driven. And then I also think about what you mentioned, like the adrenaline rush of this first show, mm-hmm. and this feeling of like, okay, this is where I'm meant to be. Like, this is where I'm meant to work. And just kind of knowing about your story that you dropped out of college to like pursue, to pursue kind of this startup journey and like working at mm-hmm. A startup. I'm kind of curious because I think sometimes when we're growing up and the people around us are driven and successful, it's like making decisions like to just leave school mm-hmm. can feel very difficult. Mm-hmm. Even if you've had that spark of I'm meant to do this, to just do it and leave school and do something that's a bit untraditional and is a risk,
yeah,
can be very difficult. Was it difficult for you?
No. It wasn't difficult, but because I saw other people that had done it before. And I also, my mom was always just very supportive of whatever it is that I wanted to do, as long as I wasn't, you know, in the streets or, you know, do anything crazy,
yeah.
on drugs, having kids, whatever the case may be. It wasn't like I was leaving school to just run off and aspire to, and there's nothing wrong with this, but like be an artist or going into something that wasn't stable. I left school because I had a job offering, you know? And I always intended to be able to go back to school and study alongside, but working in a startup is really, that's not the reality. Or perhaps I didn't have the discipline. I can also say that at the time. But I think having examples, like I would always think about Elon Musk is like my new reference. I'm like, he didn't go to school and look at him. He has satellites in the air. He owns space. But I can't remember who my old references were, but I remember continuously like seeing, learning about different producers, different business people that hadn't graduated from school. My boss that hired me at the time would tell me stories and give me those examples so that I didn't have this like guilt of feeling as though I don't belong where I am simply because I didn't secure a degree. And I think at that time, it was like 2008, 2009, people were that started to, I don't want to say it became a bit of a norm, or it started to become okay to pursue something, especially in the arts, like a production or a trade without, like I like to consider production, without having a 4-year degree. I didn't have an interest in going to film school, and I didn't have an interest in sitting in DC and wasting my time to secure a degree versus going after what I knew I would be good at.
Yeah. You know what I find interesting is even that phrase, like not wasting time, mm-hmm. because I think, and even sometimes when I reflect kind of on my journey going to university for 3 years, part of it was I didn't know what I wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
And so university is like this thing where it's kind of like socially accepted. So you don't feel like you're wasting time, but you also don't have to make a decision
right.
just yet. Like in a way, and this is what it was partly for me, it can turn into almost like a form of procrastination. And so I think there's a power in like seeing something and feeling something and then just going after it.
Oh, yeah.
Like not wasting time.
To a certain extent, right? Yeah. Like I think at my young age, I was 21. Sure. At 34, am I just going to see something and go for it? Absolutely not, right? Like I have a bit more responsibilities. I just approach things a little bit differently. I need to like strategize, assess the situation, assess the risk. But at 21, filled with spark, like you mentioned, and ambition, fully supported by my family. I have a boss that's giving me examples. I have this opportunity right in front of me. It was kind of like, why not? You know? And I don't know that anyone, I mean, maybe, but yeah, why not? I think if anyone surrounded with that environment and possibility, I hope would take that leap as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a powerful question. It's like, why not? Mm-hmm. Like, why not me? Because I think there's so many people that just feel that, like, the imposter syndrome of, like, I've seen someone else do it, but that wasn't me that did it. Like, I don't know that I'm necessarily the person that's going to make that happen. And then also, I think the other thing is sometimes, like, depending also, I guess, on what community you come from, you're also just not seeing a ton of examples, or like even your peers that are around you that you grew up with are not taking that path. And so when everyone, when people are going this way and then you're like, oh, I'm going to go this way, there's just sometimes a difficulty in that switch and being the only one. I'm guessing, did you feel, it doesn't sound like it, but did you feel any doubt at that time? Was there anything that was like, I don't know, almost felt like stepping off a ledge a bit? Okay, so we are in upgrade season. This is about upgrading your work, upgrading your pay, all of those things. And that brings us to the sponsor of today's show, Free Agency. Free Agency represents and manages talent in the tech industry. They provide you with a dedicated talent agent that helps you find and win top of market roles. So if you're looking to build your dream career today, check out Free Agency. Go to the link in the description. Thank me later.
Not in taking the job and leaving school. My feeling and doubt was more in leaving the job and going freelance, which was my first step into really starting a business. And that was more driven by, well, I'm not going to have the security. I'm not going to have the security of a check. I don't know where, you know, my next job is going to come. I don't know if people are actually going to, do they like me? You know, do they like me as an individual and trust me as an individual with being able to create work for them or develop work for them? Or do they like me as a part of this company and this package underneath my boss, who is phenomenal? Can I stand out independently, or am I only, you know, within the shadow? And I think that, when I say within the shadow, I think that was something that deep down inside was necessary for me to like step out and explore after being with the company for 6 to 7 years, which at some point had become all I knew, because I started when I was a sophomore and fast forward, you know, to 2014, 6 years later. So there was a lot of my decision was, and even again, from college to then freelance, was driven by curiosity. And curiosity without fear in the first step, and curiosity with fear sitting right next to her, like on my shoulder, my other shoulder, in the next step. And community is what drove me in both occasions. It was a client of ours. She was another woman. And she was like, just do it. She's like, just do it. I'm telling you, I will call you. I was like, no, I can't do that. You're his client, you know? Like, I don't want any bad blood. She's like, I will call you and hire you myself. She was like, just do it and trust me when I say it. And I said, what do I have to lose? You know, like, I'll just give it a shot. And within a week, I had a job and have been employed ever since. And that first step, and again, same community. It wasn't his client, but it was vendors. There was another production company that we had co-produced. And the moment I was available, they swept me in and I started doing some of the largest commercials that I've ever done. Even collaborated with them in the start of 19th and Park. A lot of our early portfolio was still continuous work of me being brought in and swept up, I would like to say, in 2014 by this production company that took me in. Then another production partner called. It's like, hey, I'm starting this thing. I've seen what you did at Naviavision. I have this shop. I have this thing. Can you come in and help me, you know, get my operations together and, you know, run some of these jobs. Yeah, sure. Can you freelance and produce this Maserati event? Yeah, sure. And that just continued to happen over time. And it was at that moment where I was able to see, again, my independent and individual value as a producer versus, you know, a producer underneath an org. And that was that other spark and fire. And so everything else that came with it, networking and emailing and reaching, that was all work I was already doing at my first company. That was all work that I watched Dean do in the 7 years that I was under him and followed him and just really adopted a lot of his practices, adopted good, made sure not to do the bad, you know, and add my own kind of spin and take on it and show up in myself. And I think I've just been evolving that individuality continuously even until today.
Yeah. You know what's special? As I listen to your story, I think it reminds me of this quote, which is, everything that you've ever wanted is on the other side of fear. And so usually these people that have like these spikes in their career where they go from one place, like place A to place B, which is somewhere they never would have imagined, it comes after they kind of make this leap.
Oh yeah.
And to them, it feels like a tremendous leap. Like it feels like such a risk. And I think what you said was so relatable, which is there's someone that's sitting in a job and maybe it's at like an established company that it's a brand name, or maybe that, like you said, like you have an incredible manager, mm-hmm. and there's this, and it's, they're in the shadow of this company, of this organization, of this team. And there's that doubt of, okay, I feel special, or like I have something to give, but once I step out from under this umbrella and go my own way, will everything just fall apart?
Right.
It's like this, almost like a gap, mm-hmm. of like, I've never done this. I don't know if I can do it. And I thought it was so interesting that you said it was really curiosity and community. Because a lot of the times what I think about, I don't think about step 10 or 20 or 30. I think about just what's step one. Mm-hmm. Like, where do you start? And so for the person that's like, they're in that job or they're in the shadow right now and they've seen something that they want to do, but it's like, they can't commit to it yet. What do you mean when you say it was curiosity, it was community that allowed them to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, quick break. 12 months ago, I left my full-time job to go all in on this podcast. And I remember at the time, one of the things that gave me the most anxiety was thinking about how to set up and start a business. And then number two is how to file and manage my taxes and accounting. And luckily, the sponsor of today's episode, Doula, helped me do that. And here's what they did. So I knew the CEO, a friend called Arjun, and he set me up with a free consultation with one of his business specialists, Riley. And Riley literally answered a mountain of questions. What sort of business should I set up? Should it be an LLC or should it be an S Corp? What business category should it be in? How do I do taxes? How do I think about expenses? All of these things. And a few weeks from now, they're actually going to help me file my first annual taxes. I reached out to Arjun and I asked him, I said, that same free consultation, could you also give that to my audience? And he agreed. When you use the link in my description below, you will get a free consultation with one of Doula's business specialists. So I think this is going to be an incredible help for you, exactly the way it was for me. Thank me later. Now back to the podcast.
I think my story is unique because what I stepped out to do and everything that I've been doing since my sophomore year is all in the same space. So there's a certain level of comfort that comes with that versus, let's say, so that's one lane. So maybe you're working, someone's working in, I'm just going to use marketing because it's my world, but like someone's working in an agency full time, but they want to start their own consultancy. I don't recommend starting an agency, so I'm going to say consultancy. they want to start their own consultancy because they're confident in their abilities. I think the most important thing is taking that curiosity and turning that into like research and strategy. If I would do it all over again, because as great and enlightening as my curiosity and my community and my jumping head in sounds, there is a lot that had to be learned from approaching it in that way as well. I wasn't financially stable. I didn't have the best credit. I didn't really have any assets and I didn't really have any savings. So again, not financially stable. So every dollar that came in, even as a freelancer, mattered. And when I didn't get a job, I was struggling, you know, and the struggle has continued in starting a business and then investing the savings into another business. And so when I think about people that are working 9 to 5 that are looking to take a leap into entrepreneurship, the first thing for me is definitely doing the research and studying. You have way more information available than I did. I think YouTube started in what, 2000, or really came out, started buzzing in 2013, 2012. I leaped in 2014. So you have so much more information available to you between Google, YouTube, ChatGPT, anything that you need to really ensure that the business that you're going into is something that is, if being profitable, you know, or being successful is important to you, is truly that, you know, and what is your risk appetite? What risk is required to start this business, run this business, scale this business? And is that something that you really have the capacity emotionally, financially, and physically to do? And then again, making sure that you have emergency funds, your credit is in order, you have financial stability, because there's going to become a time where you need a loan, you need your business credit card. And all of those things matter. There's going to come a time where you are not making any money and you're going to need to be able to dip in some savings. And I imagine that most people do not have family that they can call and ask for money, or a rich friend that they can call to ask to borrow money. And so you need to have the, you know, those things for a rainy day, because it rains. It always does with any business, whether it's service or product. And so I think when you have the luxury to, we have the, well, I don't want to say a luxury, but when you are already in a full-time job where you have a reoccurring paycheck, I think take advantage of that and save as much as you possibly can. While you're doing that, take the time to really do the research and understand what's going to go into creating this business. And for me, I think about, I'm a money person. So I'm thinking about business model. I'm thinking about unit economics. Like, if I want to start a candle business, what is it going to cost me to start up? So the first thing, I wanted to start a candle business. I still kind of do, but it's not like, it's not something I'm about to jump on any minute. You know, I talk about it. My friend's like, so these candles, I'm like, oh. But the first thing I did was make a budget. You know, like, okay, this is how much it's going to cost for the website, and how much it's going to cost for marketing. Again, everything's a lot cheaper now. You got Fiverr, you got ChatGPT, but you know, these are the costs that are going to go into it for the first 2 years. This is what I'm, you know, talking to different vendors and seeing like, okay, this is how much it's going to cost for the vessel. Okay, now this is how, this is what I'm being quoted from these vendors for the actual manufacturing of the candle. Okay, and now this is how much the packaging is going to cost. Like, those are all, that is a lot of research that you can be doing while you're still collecting your check before you actually make that decision to jump out and dive in and not, and then kind of trying to like swim and catch your breath as you're going. Do not recommend in 2024. It's not, it's just way too much information available to not have to approach starting a business in that way, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think one of the really cool things about your story is you guys were bootstrapped. And so often we hear, and I was even saying this to you before, like, so often we hear these stories of these companies that were, they actually became profitable in like year 10 or year 5 or whatever.
Yeah.
And most people cannot exist in a world where their business becomes profitable in year 10. Mm-hmm. Like, it needs to, there needs to be generating something pretty instantaneously, which is why I love that you started with like the research and the strategy. And here's the problem though that I see sometimes. And I like that you gave the example of even the candle business, because I think it's useful of like, what does research even mean? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people get entirely bogged down with like, they're watching YouTube videos, they're listening to podcasts, they're, you know, reading blogs or stories or books from people that have done it. Mm-hmm. But there's not, to be honest, the best founders and entrepreneurs that I've seen are action first. Mm-hmm. And they kind of do what's needed just to get to the next step. And so I'm curious, what's like the, if I'm really serious about starting that business and being like profitable early, like making money early, what is the action first approach to my research? Like, what is just, what's the minimum, I guess, that I have to do in order to get started? Like, where do I need to be at where I can be like, okay, I can now step into this, mm-hmm, and do this full time and not my job?
Yeah, I would say budget one. And not like your personal budget, like what is it going to cost you to start this business and run this business? For 6 months without ever having a client or ever receiving revenue, in my opinion. And do you have the capacity to fund that or secure the funds through a loan or credit card or whatever it needs to be, friends, family, whatever you have, your savings, to get through that? I think that's like a reality. Like, I think you see a lot of us and you're like, oh, we just jumped in head first. And yeah, I don't know that if they're telling you to do that, they're lying. Like, do not do that. I don't think any experienced entrepreneur that is looking at cash flow documents every day or every week is going to tell you to just dive in head first and not make sure you've got your finances in order, honestly. And then, you know, the next thing would be, outside of the budgeting is, I guess, and strategy is just perhaps before fully investing into a product, making sure that you have a customer or someone that has an appetite for what it is that you're creating. Mm. So one of my friends has said many times, like anytime he thinks about starting a business, it's important to start in the black. So in having a product, having someone that's already ready to buy your product or receive your product before going all in and maybe spending $5,000 to make this thing. So from a candle business perspective, I could say, oh, I love this scent. These are my favorite scents. Like, these are my five ones. People are just going to love it, you know, and not do any market research on what do these scents do for people emotionally? How do these scents adjust people's moods? How do these scents perform in a market? All available research. All in Google, maybe not on YouTube, but it's definitely a quick Google keyboard away, maybe reading through some Statistica to get that information. And then let that then guide perhaps what, maybe it's not all five cents that are actually going to be received well by, let's say, if I'm targeting black females or, I don't know, I shouldn't add color to it, but women, let's say. Mm-hmm. Understanding, doing the research to understand the market that you're servicing to then help then narrow down perhaps what it is that you're going to put into market. So you're not just being this artist that's just throwing things, everything at people, which can be costly. Which can be costly. And I've done it. So I'm not saying it and like, I'm not saying it from a place of, you know, you should do this. And it's like, no, I've done it the opposite way. And it's not as, you know, glamorous as it seems. And if I could start over again, I would have a strategy up front and still be confident and still be fearless and still be ambitious. I don't think that taking a month or 6 months to strategize on what it is that you believe is possible or what it is that you're interested in is truly a setback if it's meant for you.
Mm. You know what? That is such true advice because, and I felt this firsthand, because I'm naturally like super optimistic about my own abilities. Mm-hmm. So even when it came to me leaving my job to do this full time, I remember speaking with my mom and being like, you give me like 3-6 months of doing this full time, it's going to work.
Yeah.
I'm going to be making money.
Yeah.
And it was a lesson of like, it always takes longer than you think.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think it's going to take 3 months, you probably should like double, triple, quadruple that number, because yeah, it's going to take longer than you think. So I think the advice of like understanding budget, how long can you do this without making a certain amount, yeah, is incredibly important. I want to speak about the second component, which is like figuring out the demand. And I remember looking at this book, Oversubscribed, which is it basically, if you look at the best businesses, they tend to be oversubscribed. So they tend to actually have an excess demand, you know, like the bakery that you go to around the corner and there's a line around the block.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting when I was listening to your story and the story with your co-founder, especially for her, when she actually left her job to do your agency, your guys' agency full time, it felt like you guys had clients there. Like the decision to leave was actually being driven by demand.
For sure.
And so I'm curious, because I think there's so many people that they have the idea of what they want to do. They haven't figured out how to generate the demand so that it's oversubscribed to the point where like, okay, the budget makes sense and I have a service that people want that I can provide. Like, what would you say is that journey to getting to that concise offering, product, whatever you want to call it, that people actually want and that is going to be oversubscribed?
I would say building, testing, reiterating, which is a lot of what we do, especially in the tech company. And I've really learned that from the software side. And that really means it can start with an idea that's just written out and talking to your small circle of friends. Maybe it then becomes a survey to a wider group of people. Maybe it's inserting yourself into your local community and sharing what the idea is and seeing if there's an appetite for it. How are people reacting to it? How are people reacting to how you're presenting it? How are people reacting to the messaging? And taking that feedback and really applying that, you know, back into whatever it is that your business or your plan is meant to be. I think slowly building, seeding and testing and conversing about it is extremely important, and getting that feedback and running that feedback, rolling that feedback back into whatever it is that you're building, so that you continue to build something that's in demand. Our situation, I mean, in both companies, it's so unique because I was freelancing, I was producing, I was a line producer, everyone would call me, including my co-founder, you know? It was Frank Ocean. I was building a store for Evan Turner. I was doing Samsung. I was doing all of these things. I had a portfolio of clients already. And then I was doing Essence with Whitney. I think with her, one, we were already friends. This is really like our third business. This one it made sense because it's actually what we are good at, what we already do. We tried like building an AI model, all this weird stuff. This is like before AI was a thing, but I think with her, it clicked because she didn't operate just as a client, as most people did. She really operated as a partner. And I think that was because we already had an established friendship and there was a lot of trust there, and just allowing me to just kind of go do what I do, just bring me a good piece back and I'm just going to make sure it's good and let's just keep doing it that way. And I leaned into that. I think also being able to apply what I had learned from fashion and luxury and entertainment, all of these big spaces, to Black editorial media felt special to me. To be able to do that for Essence, which I grew up reading, felt special to me. I was never a fan of the look and feel of their content. I just feel like it was a little ashy. So it felt good to me to be able to apply all of these things that I had learned from the commercial space and advertising space into then doing branded content for them. And that just worked and cycled. So even our first couple of clients outside of the Essence clients that we had, because Whitney was hiring us for that stuff. And then, of course, her, you know, expanded on her relationships with brands that she was already working with there. Anytime someone would call me, I'd just be like, oh, okay, yeah, I can do it, but we're going to do it under my new company, 19th and Park. And they're like, okay, whatever. Like, sure. I'm like, no, but also, like, I need a percentage of the fee, not just like my line item, because I'm going to do it all, which doing it all means we're going to pay for it. We're going to fund it. We're going to take it on and we're going to give it back to you. Mm. And we'll collaborate with you as a production company and as a client, but we're really going to have ownership of this. Whereas before, as a line producer, I'm like, I'm using their company card. I'm going into their office, you know, like kind of working on behalf of them. So again, new stage of individuality, right? Mm. It's like freelancing was like, okay, I'm not under this person. Now it's like, okay, but now I'm truly this entity. I'm no longer this like line item. I'm an entity that needs to be treated as a true vendor and a partner. That means you need to share with me. Mm. You need to share your fees with me. And it worked, but it worked because I was respected because of the work product that I already had put out for the previous 7 years before and the relationships that I was able to build with clients and vendors and the community of support from clients and vendors that I was able to do. And so I guess going back to your question, building, testing, conversing, getting feedback for sure. And I think that's something that I've learned in my tech company, but also being really fucking good at whatever it is that you decide to do, you know, and gain and maintain respect from not just your customers. So I think sometimes people like hyper focus on customers, but like my vendors have given me some of my largest projects, my largest budgets. You know, my first AD gave me the Frank Ocean project that totally changed my career trajectory. And he just called me. Like, he was the first AD, God bless his soul. He passed away a couple of years ago, but like he was the first AD that I would hire and just bring on and just have a great relationship with. And little did I know the size of artists and clients that he was working with when he wasn't working on my stuff, but over, I want to say 5 or 6 years, it had to be maybe even longer, at least 6 years of working together. When he knew that I left and went independent, he was working on something for Kanye. He was working on, not Glow in the Dark, what was the Madison Square Garden Yeezy Season show? Mm-hmm. And Kanye and the executive producer needed a pop-up and called me like, yo, T, it's 11:30 at night. But on every other shoot that I've done with him, what's up? It's 11:30. What you need? I got you. Mm. So he already knew, again, from that relationship that he could call me 11:30 at night, call me, need this thing, need this pop-up, needs to be open by 8 o'clock. Say less. Been there, done that. Do it happily. That relationship, then the day-to-day manager for Kanye then left, went to Frank, saw the ability, brought me over there, right? All goes back to the fact that it was treating someone good, having a great relationship and working relationship with one of my crew members. Mm. And it kind of just, that opportunity led me into another opportunity and it kind of just continued to go from there.
Mm. Yeah. You know, I think you say something so important, which is like being really good. And yeah, it's like, I think a lot of the times in business, it's like you're trying to hunt for what that offer is, or like what is the business going to do. Mm-hmm. I actually think the perfect foundation is, what am I actually just really good at?
Oh yeah,
because you want your business to be based on something that's real,
right?
And especially not for the moments where it's great and you're scaling, for the moments where it's difficult, you want it to be based on something that is real and you're like, I'm actually one of the best at this.
1000%, because I can say I am one of the best producers. And if I don't have a producer, I can produce this myself. And that feels really good to say, regardless of the scale of a company that we're at, right? There was something that you said that I lost my thought. But being really good, knowing what you're good at as a foundation so that you can build the world around you within your company to get it to where it needs to be. So if you're a good salesman, that's what you need to focus on, right? And it doesn't mean you need to go spend a bunch of money hiring. There's strategic partnerships. You can ask for favors. You can lean into mentors. There's a lot of different ways. But maybe you're a great salesperson and great at research and you love candles, but you don't understand manufacturing. So if you know that sales and strategy is your, and research is your, I don't know why I keep going back to those things. I think that's just like the space I'm in life right now. It's like a lot of strategy and research. But then you may want to find a co-founder or a partner that understands manufacturing, that understands sourcing, and what it looks like to actually build and put out a product into the world. And if it's not a co-founder, maybe a consultant. Maybe it's a community that you can go into and begin to ask questions and familiarize yourself with other people that are perhaps already in this space with that particular focus that is not your strong suit, and, you know, build that way. So I definitely do that in both companies.
Yeah. I think that's it. That's important. It's like the self-awareness of understanding what am I really good at, and then almost putting that at the heart of your strategy.
Yeah.
Because then that can inform everything else, which is like, oh, okay, if I wanted to get a co-founder, it makes sense that they have this skill set because that complements what I'm great at. You know what? I want to go deeper on the co-founder point, because obviously you have one for 19th and Park, and then you also have one for your SaaS business. And so I'm curious, because I think there's so many people out there that are like, do I need the co-founder to get started? And then if I am looking for a co-founder, I feel like a lot of what I see is people almost trying to force a co-founder. They're like hunting for a co-founder.
And
I'm just curious, what's your thoughts on that? Because I think there's so many businesses that even end because of the co-founders like split up or just kind of diverge. What are your thoughts on, do I even need a co-founder to get started? And then if I'm going to get one, how do I get a great fit?
I wouldn't say that everyone needs a co-founder. I think you really, it goes back to, again, like assessing the type of business that you're operating. I think if you care about career harmony, it's helpful to have a partner.
What does that mean, career harmony?
It's my I should say like work-career harmony, work-life harmony, and really just balance. Because for me, I have times where I can turn off and I can enjoy time with my family or the necessary time to myself without knowing that my company is on fire because I have a co-founder on both sides. I can go on vacation to Hawaii and Jamaica and know that my companies are not on fire because I have co-founders that I trust, and vice versa. They can get married. They can go have kids. They can do their thing and know that the company's not going to be set on fire because they have a co-founder and partner that they can trust. So there's an ease that comes with sharing, but that also requires a lot of patience and a lot of vulnerability. Because you're, and I'm sure you've seen this, like Whitney and I have talked about it before, it's a marriage. You're forming a marriage. It is a relationship that you are heavily investing into and you're really committing to. Like, our taxes are attached, you know, like we've got, there's a lot that is shared. Like, everything about the business shows up in your personal life. And especially when we're talking about financially and, you know, financial documentations. And so, it's important that that person is responsible and understands that responsibility, but also is just willing to grow and have a growth mindset. And I can say that for sure about both of my co-founders. They're always looking for ways to improve themselves and myself as well. They're always open to feedback. They're more than open to giving feedback and sharing their thoughts. And honestly, like, as intense as it can be sometimes, I wouldn't trade it for the world, because I would rather know how my partner feels than, you know, trying to walking on eggshells and that not being shared and vice versa. In terms of like how people should go about co-founders, I feel like I don't necessarily have that exact answer, but I would say that in seeking and exploring partnerships and co-founders, you just both have to be really fucking passionate about what you're doing. The passion in whatever it is you're creating is where that synergy starts to me. The passion in storytelling is our synergy at 19. The passion in building something really fucking awesome and innovating is our connectivity and our synergy and tech and workflow. And being committed to that no matter what, I think is really, really essential. So highs, lows, whatever may happen, and the lows are low, and the lows happen, we're still grounded and rooted in like this is our passion. So if you have a co-founder that was never really passionate about the idea anyway, they thought it was a quick come up. Of course, at the first sign of hardship, they're like, I'm out. I'm gonna go find something else to do. You know, I never really wanted to do it anyway. I thought it was just a quick opportunity. You know, and that happens. People switch up all the time. People chase money, chase paper all the time. You want to ensure that your business partner is not that person.
You know what I think is interesting. I think in order to build anything great and to build anything meaningful is difficult and is a journey, and so. I'm curious because even in the quote that I read out in the beginning, that was in 2022 and you had mentioned doing $10 million in revenue in 5 years and it's gone past that. Mm-hmm. Like it's gone way past that. But I'm curious, what have been some of those difficult moments where your belief, that belief that we spoke about in the beginning, which was so rock solid and so even just built in your childhood and your whole life, where was that belief like really tested?
I mean, at this point it's been a variety of times. I would say definitely in hiring and managing people. We scaled really fast, we hired a bunch of people. I don't think we took the best approach. We didn't have HR the first time. We were just kind of hiring friends, firing friends, fighting with friends. It was, you know, a great learning experience. But in that, so many times I questioned, am I a good leader? Because I can't seem to, I've built all these teams around the world to like make a commercial, but I can't, and I've built teams in these startups that I've worked for that were there years after I left. One intern that I hired at that first vendor that hired me when I left Navia Vision is still there. He's the head of production. So I've had been able to do in every other space, but I couldn't quite figure out how to build and keep my own team. And that made me question my leadership style. That made me question my management style, as we talked about earlier, and reflect inwards and, you know, go to therapy and get some coaching and figure out how I could show up better, because there was a consistency of, it wasn't a lot of overturn. Probably, I think I'm at my third head of production. So it's not that bad in 7 years, but still it bothered the fuck out of me. And every time someone would leave, I would have to get back in it. So it would pull me out of like strategizing and scaling and going and getting more clients because, oh shit, this person doesn't want to be here anymore. I can't keep my team. So now I've got to go produce again. And that goes back to being really fucking good and being a great producer. Did I say that on this or was this beforehand? I can't remember.
I think before.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like it goes back to what is the sweet spot for me is that at the end of the day, I can roll up my sleeves and produce. But I don't want to have to do that. And I found myself having to do that over and over again because I couldn't get the right team and I couldn't keep the right team. So that was an issue. It continues to be something that comes up in different aspects of the business because some people may leave for personal reasons or some people may get poached by other companies, bigger companies that have more to offer. And so we're always finding ways to either, if it's not a leadership style issue, it's maybe processes, it's maybe culture. It may be things that they're experiencing within the organization that maybe we weren't even paying attention to. The other thing is definitely financial hardships. We have not ever received any funding. We've never gone out for, again, talking about 19, workflow is different, but we've never gone out for investment, but we've certainly gone out for loans, credit cards, all of the above to pretty much every major bank, including the bank that we bank with on a day-to-day basis, and have never been approved. And that's the reality, which I just learned. I just joined WPO last year, and I learned that that's the reality of 98% of female-owned businesses. I also learned that only 2% of female-owned businesses actually make over $1 million in revenue, which is insane to me. But that has continued to be a hardship. So it requires us to manage our cash flow very tightly. Every decision that we make is a money decision, you know? Every step that we take has to be thought from a place of budgeting and spending. And probably that's also why I'm so heavy on, like, before you start a business, make sure you have a budget and you know what it's going to cost, because still in year 7, that's how we operate. Even with having a reserve, it doesn't matter. It's just kind of the mentality and the flow now in the business. And I don't think that that would really ever change at this point, because we've been operating that way for so long. So I would say staff, and again, just access to funds.
Yeah. You know what I think is interesting? There's a certain psychology to being an entrepreneur and a founder. And I think one of the kind of principles, patterns, things that I've seen is this mindset of like extreme ownership, which is, and I think it's needed to succeed, which is like, especially in the beginning, it's like everything is kind of my fault. Like the reason we're not doing more sales is because something that I need to do better. Or the reason that this person left is because of the way that I communicated. I could have been, you constantly have to gear your mind towards like finding the flaws, the gaps in your business. And a lot of business is self-improvement.
Yeah.
It's like you're improving things about yourself so that can be reflected in the business. And I think the interesting thing that I heard when I was listening to you is you mentioned how much it bothered you, like the people leaving or turnover. And I just think like we take everything as it's something about us.
It's personal.
Yeah, it's personal. Yeah. And I'm just curious, you mentioned going to therapy and all this, the reflection and all of that. What do you think it was? Why did it bother you so much losing people?
Well, I mean, that's more. Being a person that is, so what I will say is in my family, the success is a success, and the way that we were raised was confident, but there's also this feeling of needing to be perfect. And I think that perfectionism, who's ever asked me this? The need to be perfect translates into people pleasing, which translates into anytime someone's not happy, it's what did I do? And that carries into my business. That said, I also care about how I'm perceived. I also, especially with people that I care about, I also care about the experience that I create for people, whether that's on set, whether that's traveling, or whether that's in my organization and my set. That's my day-to-day set when I think about it. And so knowing that people don't have a good experience or aren't happy or think that, you know, they will have a better experience elsewhere, then it's also like the people pleaser in me, the curiosity in me, all of those things like combined makes me want to know why. And makes me want to continue to understand how I can be better. I think my growth in general is always from not chasing money, but chasing being better. It's chasing growth, and it's always chasing personal growth. Of course, with finances, even more growth can happen, right? Or you can attain certain things that you want, or you can build a retirement fund and you can be able to start foundations and invest in different things and help other people. But at the base of it, it's how do I become a better person and how can I use this experience to improve upon myself? I was just having a disagreement with a friend and they're frustrated at me for, I will honestly say, I don't fully understand why, but I made a point to say, this was just this morning, I just made a point to say, can you help me understand how I can improve? What is it exactly that I did to you? Can you give me a bit more direct feedback so that I can improve and grow? Because if you don't tell me, then I won't know. And then I just be, you know, a little sad, bitter woman. Let's use a different word, but I'd be the sad, bitter woman that's just angry over words that were said in a text message without clarity and without understanding. And so that might just be me as a person, but I like to learn from the people that I'm sharing space with, if I can.
Yeah. Now that's such a healthy mindset. And it reminds me actually of this. I remember seeing this quote from Alex Hormozi, which is, when you focus on being bigger or making more money, you will not make more money. When you focus on being better, you will make more money and you will be bigger, which is like this. I think so much the focus, especially in the beginning, there's like this relentless focus on like, how do I just make more money?
Gotta get it.
Whereas the real question is, how do you just get better at the craft of whatever you're doing?
Right.
And then the byproduct of that is being bigger and is making more money.
Yeah.
But like starting with the self-improvement.
With the self-improvement and community. Again, I go back to community networking. Networking is a popular like business term. In your growth, in your stages of growth, it's important to find community of whether it's women, entrepreneurs, people like you that can share their stories and you share yours back, share their experiences and you share yours back. So I remember when I was getting ready to start Workflow, I was like, okay, we're really going to go all in here. Like I still feel the need. And it was inspired by it was always a thought since like 2015. It was something that I always saw and felt like the industry needed because we're just not digitized. It's actually really fucking crazy. If you knew the way that production's operated, your mind would be blown. And it's industry-wide. And in starting 19th, I was like, oh, this is getting out of control. Like, I can't even see the data. Like, I don't understand how my team is working, how they're functioning. Nothing's just in one place. And I was like, you know, I think I'm going to go all in. And Isaiah has been a dear friend and has been with me through my whole career journey. So I had always would just call him and run it by him. And he'd always be like, let's get it. You know, like I'm ready when you are, let's go. And one of the first things I did was I started joining communities and going to conferences. So I joined Black Woman Talk Tech. So I was like, I'm a Black woman and I think I'm going to do this tech thing, but I don't fully know everything about tech, but I know this whole entire fucking industry of advertising. And my business partner knows tech. That's why he's my business partner. But I still have some awareness myself. So I joined their organization. I joined Female Founders Collective. I joined Summit. Just started joining all of these communities. And I think where I am today, even my ability to oversee both businesses, have healthy relationships with my co-founders, have great product that exists, a lot of it has come from the people that I've met that have either been in my place before, that have experienced what I've experienced, or some that are even still trying to figure it out, but may have discovered something else that I hadn't learned yet. And just that continuous sharing of resources is so beyond valuable. Like it is the centerpiece of being successful, in my opinion. Like I can't be in a bubble in a corner and trying to figure it out by myself. I would never be where I am today.
Yeah. You know, I have this this phrase that I always say, which is like, if you're looking to make more money or be more successful at anything, there's usually two things that are missing. The first one is skills and the second one is belief. I think you make a great point, which is actually there's a third one, which is network on top of that, like who
network,
you know,
and community.
So skills, belief, community. You know what, here's where I want to end, which is, You you quoted this stat that 2% of women-led businesses make over $1 million a year. And I think when it comes to skills or network, you can always get more of that. I think sometimes what is the more, the thing that we miss, the thing that's harder to actually implement a lot of the times is that belief component, that mm-hmm. belief component. And so 2% of women-led businesses make over $1 million. I'm curious, for anyone that's listening, if you were to give those women that are interested in starting a business and want to make over $1 million, if you could give them one belief, just take one belief from you, what would that be?
There's importance in curiosity. There's importance in faith in yourself and your ability. I think before you're going to step out, make sure that you're clear on self independently of any other outside influence. Make sure that you are clear-minded and guided by your spirit and who you are, because that's how you're going to need to present yourself as an entrepreneur and an owner. You're going to need to stand in conviction of who you are and what you're doing. So if you're not clear there, take the time to get clear there first, because that's what's driving your belief and your faith to continue to push forward, even in the moments of your hardships and of your downtime. That's what I will say.
Mm.
On top of that, have your money together.
Have your money.
Have your money and have your strategy. Do your research. Those are all important too. But in addition to that, be whole in self and clear in who you are and what you're doing. And why you're doing it, so that no matter what someone may say in a comment or in a negative review, and you're pitching to investors and they just don't fucking get it, you know, or to a client and they reject you. There's so much rejection in running a business, product, service, tech, and raising. Raising for workflow, I was overwhelmed with rejection. And my business partner actually closed our funding. I'm closing another one now, but like he led that first, you know, amount that we ran. And I had hundreds of conversations. This is my 7th year as an entrepreneur, and I'm still faced with that rejection. So that's why being so full and clear on who you are, even as you grow and evolve, and always coming back to self is extremely important, because you're going to get knocked left and right, and you've got to be able to really stand up straight and stand back up.
No, being whole in self. I actually love that. I love that as a place to end. It's just so good. Being whole in self. Yeah. Thank you so much, Tahira.
Thank you.
This was amazing.
This is fun. I feel like a therapy session.
Okay, before we get out of here, I had to give you guys one last gem. The sponsor of today's show, Free Agency. Free Agency helps you find and win top of market roles. Here's how they do it. They are your career quarterback. They provide you with a dedicated talent agent. They understand you and your career goals. They will find you interviews at top firms and make sure you secure a top of market salary. So if you're looking to take your career to the next level, Free Agency is the place for you. Go to the link in the description for more information.